Hi, my name is Jayla, and I went to an HBCU. What's up, brothers and sisters? This is Jayla, and welcome to another episode of I Went to an HBCU. Today, we're going to be interviewing me.
Or rather, I'll be interviewing you today.
Yes, my lovely husband, Reggie, will be interviewing me today and talking about my journey to Spelman. Say hey to the people, Reggie.
How you doing, everyone? Good to be here. Good to be here.
And thank you for interviewing me today.
Always. I talk to you all the time, so now we're just, trying to get paid off of it.
All right, well, let's get started.
All right. Well, tell us, tell the people about yourself.
Well, I grew up in a little town in Arkansas. It's called Helena, West Helena. It's about 9,000 people. It's really small. I went to a charter school. It's actually known nationally. It's called KIPP. And I graduated with about 40 people. I was the salutatorian out of a class of 40. And I'm not first-generation college student. My family is very well-educated. And most of them went to, most of my family members went to the same HBCU, University of Arkansas Pine Bluff, which is UAPB. All right. And, I always knew I wanted to go to an HBCU when I started applying for colleges because I wanted to be at, an institution where everybody looked like me.
Okay. And did you already know what you wanted to do, or would you have to go to Spelman and kind of figure out exactly what your career path was?
So I had a plan. I had a dream of wanting to be a veterinarian. And we'll talk about this later when we talk about my time at Spelman, but I did not have the tools equipped, like with science classes and stuff like that. We only had one, biology-ish class that we took in high school, and that was ninth grade. And the rest was, I took physics, I took environmental science, and
Chemistry. Okay.
I took chemistry. Gotcha. I took chemistry. Anatomy probably would have helped me, but I didn't think I needed to take it, because why am I taking human anatomy and I'm going to be working on animals? So I took environmental science instead. I did have AP biology, but we didn't have a teacher for it, so we were kind of just doing it on Blackboard.
Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Okay. So, how did all that land you at Spelman in particular? You mentioned UAPB, so how did we make that jump?
So, I had been to UAPB before, had looked at their campus. It wasn't that I didn't want to go to UAPB. It was that, I had career counselors who most of them, and teachers, that most of them went to PWIs. So that's what they really pushed for us, was to go to PWIs. And I just didn't want to do that. And so they had me apply to some more HBCUs that were, ranked high on the scale. And, I got accepted to Spelman. I also got accepted to Tuskegee, Xavier, and UAPB. And I actually got a full ride to UAPB. I think my main reason for not choosing UAPB was that people had kind of spooked me into thinking, they weren't going to challenge me, or that it wasn't a good school. But UAPB is a great school. People go there and become wildly successful. So, yeah. It's what you make of your college experience, not, the school.
That's a good point.
Yeah, I wouldn't trade my time for Spelman for anything though. Hmm. I ended up choosing Spelman because I went to go visit the school. So Tuskegee, I didn't know anybody in that area of Alabama, and Xavier, I didn't know anybody in New Orleans. At Spelman, it was Atlanta. I knew I had quite a bit of family members down here, and so I was just like, okay, if I know some people around the city and can get to know the area, I feel like I'll be okay. And and I wanted to know somebody in the city I was going to school in, because I knew I was going to be away from home, and my parents are not going to just be able to drop and drive 5 to 8 hours somewhere. So I wanted somebody to be able to help me locally. But then I went to tour Spelman, and then I went to Spellbound, which is like Spelman's Accepted Students Weekend or whatever. And I stayed a couple of days, and I absolutely loved it. I was like, oh, yeah, this is the school for me. This is the school for me.
Mm. That's good. So I guess speaking of like schools being for you, so before we fast forward to I guess your time at Spelman, tell us a little bit about, I guess, the main question that people will want to ask for once they find their dream school is that, you know, how do we pay for it?
So I was a little sad because I had to let go of some scholarships. So one thing about scholarships, y'all, I know people are in this race like, oh, I want to get this amount of money. I want to get this amount of money, add up all this money. Because a lot of schools have, like, we had a little competition going where whoever got the most scholarship money, you know, got a prize or whatever. And a lot of that scholarship money didn't even apply to when I went to Spelman because those scholarships were specific to those schools. So like I said, I got a full ride to UAPB. I got accepted to University of Memphis and had a scholarship there. I had a scholarship to Tuskegee, and I think I had a scholarship at Xavier, too. And I had a scholarship at Spelman. But I couldn't use any of those scholarships from those other schools. Then the outside scholarships I applied for, so Kip had given us, had partnered with a family and given us some scholarship money. And then I got one from Omega Psi Phi. And I got a couple of more scholarships, too. I couldn't use any of my in-state, so Arkansas Lottery, I couldn't use that. So I really just was leaning on the money that Kip gave me and the money that Spelman had given me. And Spelman was only paying for half of my tuition. Not half tuition, room and board, but just half of tuition. And then junior and senior year, I actually ended up taking out loans.
Hmm. Okay. All right. So you've dealt with the financial part. You know, you've gotten past graduation, and so now we're in August. You're getting ready to move into your freshman dorm and everything. You're getting ready to apply for housing. And so, just tell us, like, what were your first impressions of the campus now actually being a student there?
So I was actually a little bit nervous because when I did Spellbound, I stayed in HH, and you know, the freshman dorms don't have air. And I have asthma really bad, and I was like, oh, no, this isn't going to work. But me and my parents kind of asked around, and I got a medical pass to live in LLC1, which had air. But, yeah, it was fine. It was fine. Went in there. You know, like, at HBCU dorm, it's going to kind of feel like, you know, old or whatever, but yeah, they had it clean. The bathrooms were clean. We had a great, like, cleaning staff that was there every day. They made sure the lounges were clean. It was clean in there. So,
yeah, people forget that the HBCU stands for historical.
Yes, it's history.
So you will definitely, you're going to see some history, whether you want to or not.
Right. It's going to be 11 other people that just stayed in that same room that you did and used the same bathroom.
That's part of the charm, you know, right? You know, just knowing that, like, all these great people stayed in this dorm before you and, you know, they were able to go become great just from being in that same dorm that you probably complain about to your parents.
Right.
Especially if you're not a fan of it or if you don't have AC.
Right, right. And see, nowadays, like, the kids I see on Instagram and stuff, they'll deck they room out and their room go from looking like a jail cell to the Taj Mahal or something. It just looks real good. So, you know, your room is really what you make it. Your dorm is really what you make it. But yeah, campus was pretty. It was hot moving in hot Atlanta.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, my roommate was fine. Everything like living was fine. But those classes, that first week of classes, that my first impression of them classes. Classes smacked me in the face. I was a biology major at the time. And they had a meeting with us saying, you know, if you don't have these prerequisites, you know, you might not make it. I was like, you know, I can just study hard enough and, you know, try hard enough and I'll be able to know. I started off my first week doing bad. And I would stay up till about 2, 3, 4 in the morning trying to study this biology stuff, and I was not doing good. And see, the other classes were hard too, so like ADW, the African diaspora in is it the world of women?
is African diaspora in the world.
In the world.
Yes.
I'm mad you know, you can remember that more than I can.
It says it on the book.
I have the book at the house on the library shelf. That's the only reason he knows. But
it's yeah. not, but okay.
But yeah, so African diaspora really didn't trip me up that much because I had learned Black history in school, and see, a lot of people hadn't. I didn't even know, like, even back then, that a lot of teachers weren't teaching Black history. They teach American history, but they wouldn't really too much touch on slavery. And so, you know, I was able to do well in that class. I was doing well in my math class because I was really good with math in school. But boy, those biology classes, I think that was the only class that I had below a B in. I think I had a C minus in that class.
Oh, man. Yeah.
Yes. And then that was like the biology 101 class. So these like the weed out classes.
Mm-hmm.
I was doing fine in lab, but it was when we got ready to take those quizzes. I'm like, oh,
yeah, the
my
lecture.
Gosh.
Yeah.
Whew. So, yeah, it was rough that them first couple of months. And then I was in band, too, which I...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that was part of what kept me sane. Because I was struggling with the class. I'd be sad. Like, oh, my gosh, I messed up on this quiz. But, yeah, no, the rigor of the classes really did. It jolted me a little bit. Because here I am thinking, you know, I'm salutatorian in my class. I'm, you know, I'm hot
yep.
stuff. No, babes.
Yeah, no, that's...
It's salutatorians of classes of 1,000 up in here with
yeah.
you.
So, yeah, no, that's generally one thing that you can expect coming to an HBCU, that if you think you can, like, no matter how smart you think you are, there's always somebody that is coming behind you that is just as talented. And, like, I think that speaks another thing to, like, the academic capacity of HBCUs. A lot of people look at HBCUs and just kind of automatically assume that we're not as academically rigorous. But then you have some of the best and the brightest students coming here and realizing that it gets very real very quickly. So
yeah.
it's pretty recurring thing in my interview.
Yeah.
So.
There is no such thing as being too prepared when thinking about colleges, and it's good to know the real experience from someone who has been there before. Going to an HBCU is a unique college experience, and this is the place for you to be if you want to know what it's like for real. Here at I Went to an HBCU, we are exploring the joys, hardships, and opportunities that come with attending an HBCU. Hey, we've been there. Let us tell you how we made it to the other side.
So, speaking of adjustment periods, how was the adjustment period going from a smaller city like Helena, West Helena, Arkansas, to going to Atlanta? Because, you know, again, if you know anything about Atlanta, Atlanta is huge. Atlanta is about 30 cities in one. You can be 2 hours away from Atlanta and technically still be in Atlanta,
right?
According to some people. So it's just how was that adjustment period going from that small city to this large metropolis?
I actually fell in love with Atlanta. That's why I'm back here now.
Yeah.
But, you know, I already knew about the history of Atlanta and, like, all the Black leaders that had marched through here and had been from here. And it felt, even though, like, it felt like a different city, it still felt like home. It felt like, you know, there's a community around here that, you know, cares, because even though the West End, like, people are like, oh, the West End is dangerous, the Bluff is dangerous, it may be dangerous to
it
you.
It is dangerous.
It is it is a little rough around.
But it's also
edges.
A community, and there's still people around.
Right, there. It's still a community, and it's still people, and it's people who care about their community in the best way that they possibly can. But, I actually really loved Atlanta. I was hanging out more so then than now. I would hang out with my family members down here, and that made me, you know, feel like I wasn't so far away from home. And then okay. also, it's so much to do down here that I just didn't have at home. Like, if we wanted to go to the mall, we would have to drive to Memphis. And see, Memphis from my town is an hour and a half. So, you know, you having to drive all the way to an hour and a half just to get some clothes and go to Macy's. But here, you know, you got the West End Mall, but we weren't going there too much.
For
we
sure go not. There a few but times. You didn't have to drive an hour and a half to
right,
get to a
I
decent mall.
I could just
mall.
Jump on the train. Like, we didn't have public transit yep. in Helena. Like, I learned how to use public transit, learn how to get on a train, learn how to navigate the city. So I was just going around and doing stuff and, you know, just having a grand old time. I really love Atlanta.
That's good. All right, so finally getting into your actual time in Spelman. So what were some of the things that you did at Spelman? What were some of the things that defined your experience over that 4 years?
So I did marching band, and I've been on the drum line since sixth grade, so I knew kind of whatever school I was going to go to, I was going to at least audition for the band. And like I said before, I was looking at UAPB, and I had seen they band at homecoming and everything like that. So I was just kind of thinking, you know, oh, I'm going to have to audition. You know, I might not get in, but that's okay. I can work hard and maybe get in, you know, sophomore year or whatever. But with Morehouse, I think the numbers were not as high. So they really weren't. I don't think we turned too many people away. So I went in and auditioned for Blake Gaines. And like I said, I was thinking I was hot stuff because I was salutatorian in my class. I've been drumline since sixth grade, and I was playing quads in high school, and he put me on cymbals, and I was a little bit upset, and I'm like, now wait a minute, I ain't never played no cymbals. I told him I played snare, I played bass drum, and I played quads, and he was like, we don't have quads here. Like, why not? There's some quads. And I would see the quads up. I saw the quints upstairs when I first came up there. And I'm like, y'all have quints up there? And he was like, no, what do you call it? It was MEAC. Right. We're in the MEAC or whatever.
We're in the SIAC, which
the
still doesn't SIAC. Make any sense. Because Clark Atlanta, who was also in SIAC, has quints. For context, for the non-musically inclined, cymbals are generally like those just two gold plates that people are that are crashing together. Quints are like the set of five drums, like that you see on a marching drum line. Not every marching drum line has them, but basically the point here is that quints take a lot more coordination. And she thought that she had some chops, and then Blake Gaines was just like,
hey, no,
we
I'm
don't
not
give you that.
That
she do
bad.
Have some chops though.
I'm not that bad.
She's not bad at all. But Blake was just like, yeah, no, you can play cymbals.
And I was actually really good with bass drum, but bass drum and the tenor section were already full.
Yep.
And I probably wouldn't, he wasn't going to move anybody from there. And I hadn't been there. Like, I didn't do band camp or anything. I had came, that was probably the end of the first week of classes. I think I went over there and was like, because I didn't even know girls could march at first. I didn't know what I was about to do. I thought I was probably going to do, like, orchestra or something. And I ended up doing orchestra, too. So I ended up doing concert band 1 year, and I did orchestra. I think I did orchestra, if not...
You did do orchestra, I remember. I don't know if you did
it
freshman
years.
Year.
I did it 3 years. Yeah. I didn't do it all 4 years. But, yeah, I knew I was going to audition. I didn't know I was going to get put on cymbals. But I actually learned to love the cymbals. And I, you know, they were heavy. And it was hot most of the time. But I enjoyed myself. And I enjoyed the marching band because, you know, I enjoyed the connections I got a chance to meet to make, because I wouldn't have met my husband if it wasn't for the Morehouse College House of Funk marching band.
See, I was going to make the joke like, wait, you were in marching band? I was in marching band too. No way.
What a coincidence.
That's crazy. Hey. But, you know, we met as a result of the Morehouse College House of Funk marching band. So
our sound engineer, Drake,
not Drake,
who was on the first episode, actually, he was also in the band with me, too. So connections, great, great, great connections.
For sure.
And we still hang out, we still talk, we still everything, like, you know, this is my family. So we talk about making those connections and networking. Join, you know, a something. It don't have to be band. It could just be a club. I also did a side quest. I was in Anointed Vessels, which was the miming
quest.
People for what was it, Sister Chapel? Mm-hmm. Yeah, Sister Chapel had a gospel mime group, and I performed once with them. But the practice times were the same time as the band. And I was like, nope, love the band. I'm going to choose the band.
Yep.
But, yeah, get in any club, find something. Like, it's going to be something there for you.
Yeah.
Like, it's
and
so
if it's
many
not,
things.
Build it.
Right. If so it's not people, there already, you can make it.
Yeah, there's so many people who come and during their time they say, oh, well, this is a need. I think it needs to be filled on campus, but there isn't one at the time. And so they build it. So, and I think Dre touched on this really, really great on the first episode, which is that HBCUs are often some of the only places where young black people can just be free and just kind of do whatever they want within reason. And so one of the best things about coming to these institutions is that they allow you to make space for yourself. Like, they hold space for you, and they allow you to continue to make space for yourself as well, so long as it's constructive and aligns with the aims of the school. But again, like, that's just one of the things that defined at least my college experience, was being able to make my own student organization and also, like, do things that I wanted to do. So, yeah.
Right. You think Harvard gave those kids a Quidditch team? No, they made that up themselves.
Exactly. They filled out the paperwork and it happened.
You fill out the paperwork, fill out the requisition, you good.
Do almost anything if you fill out the paperwork.
Right. But, I did get a question from a current HBCU student asking about the culture of HBCU marching bands. So, for me, and we're going to have other people who've marched at other schools, but for me, marching at Morehouse, it is different because we're not a large band. We're not Southern. We're not Jackson. And so, like I said, he wasn't really turning people. Maybe if I had an audition my freshman year at somewhere like Southern, the director that may have put me on cymbals. Or he may have not picked me up at all and be like, you know, come back and audition next year. And I would have had to go home and get my life together. But we were small and
But you wouldn't have to go home. You just would march that year. You'd still be a student.
Not go home. But, like, go back to your dorm and get your life.
Like, you didn't make the band. Go home.
But, no. Yeah, they probably would have told me to audition, you know, try again next year. You know, it's okay. But,
You just wouldn't have marched. You probably just been, like, part of the pep band or something.
Oh, yeah,
like
I could have been a part of the pep band or something. Yeah, but, yeah, with Morehouse, it's a little different because we don't have a lot of people, so they're probably not going to turn a lot of people away. And one thing about HBCU marching bands, because we got exposed to all the other marching bands, it's a competition, and it's whoever's band sounds the best. Like, you going out there for the football team, and, you know, the football team is trying to go against the other team and stuff like that. You got another team that you going against, too. Yep. It's them other folks on the other side mm-hmm. of them stands. And, you know, if somebody blows on you, it's embarrassing. And we got blown on by a couple of schools. Now, for the most part, my freshman year, we would be pretty good. Freshman and sophomore year, we were like, oh, yeah, we would go toe-to-toe with, you know, we would go toe-to-toe with UAPB when we would go down there. But, yeah, I think it's a little different at Morehouse. We still had the, you know, we getting up in the morning during band camp and we running for PT. So if you decide you want to be in the marching band, and I know a couple of high school students who play drums at, like, their church or whatever, and they want to go into being in the marching band at HBCU, just know it's, you know, it's calisthenics. You're going to be running. You're going to be marching long distances. Because if you have a parade, that's a mile and some change. So just know you're going to have to put in some hard physical work mm-hmm. if you want to be in an HBCU marching band.
Yeah.
In any marching band, honestly, and you want to look and sound good.
Yeah, that kind of goes for any instrumentalist, too. There were a lot of horn players who came to marching band who had never played in a marching band before. You know, their schools didn't have marching band programs, and so when they got there, that was their first time actually ever playing outside. But I will say that the benefit of a school like that is that, you know, you're still building your culture. You can certainly be a big fish in a little pond in Morehouse's band program, and also any other band programs. And so if you're that sort of student that wants to stick out in a smaller program, you know, you'll probably sacrifice a little bit of the traditions and a little bit of, since Morehouse's band certainly isn't like a household name or anything, but you can have a lot of influence over growing the band and making it better. And I think, at least in my experience, that's been that's been a benefit, is that I can come back and have a positive influence on the culture, whereas, you know, I can just step away from it and be like, you know, if I went to Southern or TSU or something, you know, it would just be, you know, the culture is what the culture is, and they're always going to sound good, but I don't have anything to contribute to that.
Yeah. And another thing is, like, I feel like HBCU bands, and to me it doesn't matter which band you march for, they are the plug for, like, you going into being in the music professionally, or even just knowing anything about on-screen show business stuff, because we had been in the Capital One commercial with Samuel Jackson and Spike Lee. We had played around the city and stuff like that. We had been on ESPN. They did another commercial with, what, like Pringles or something like that. Then we had been on The Yard.
So many opportunities.
So many opportunities. Drumline, too. You know, a whole bunch of different stuff.
We don't talk about Drumline, too, but it was an opportunity.
Some folks like that movie.
Are the people in the room with us right now?
They may not be in the room with us right now. Some folks like that movie. Oh, Lord.
Exactly.
But, well, yeah, a lot of bands get called for stuff like that, and you never know, like, what kind of opportunity, what type of networking opportunity that brings to you either. And then with music and stuff, Reggie does music professionally. We got a chance to play for Earth, Wind & Fire freshman year. And also, you get to meet professional. Kirk Franklin came in one day to practice. So you get to meet all of these people and, you know, get a chance to have some exposure for yourself, and also, like, make connections. You don't know what kind of connections you'll make with marching with the band or any activity you do at your HBCU, honestly.
And again, if you're non-musically inclined and you just feel like your eyes have glazed over at the fact that we've talked about band for the last 10 or 15 minutes, this is also kind of like that in all the HBCUs, where you just have so much access to giants in your field that you wouldn't even necessarily expect. And like, some of the same people that go and speak at Harvard are also trying to go speak at HBCUs as well. And so, again, that just speaks to, I guess, the level and the impression that people have of it, is that you would be very much surprised that, you know, we're also keeping up the standard here as well. Just because we have the, I guess, what is the connotation of being party schools or whatever, like, I guess, first of all, there's a lot of great parties around here. If you're a student, you'll never quite be bored, but you're also going to be challenged as well.
Want to support the podcast? Contact us at iwtahbcu@gmail.com to find out ways to donate. Again, that is iwtahbcu@gmail.com.
All right, now that we've gotten past the obligatory band section, any other activities that you did at Spelman that you would want to talk about?
Most of what I did was band. I did concert band and orchestra, where I was playing the timpani. And I did Anointed Vessels, which was nice. And I probably would have went back to Anointed Vessels if I ended up joining Friendship Baptist Church and I wasn't going to Sister Chapel anymore. I can't think of anything else I did. I'm D9. I did Delta Sigma Theta, but I didn't do that until grad chapter. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I did that. Ooh, that was back in, that was 2021. That was way after I graduated. So, most of my time was taken up by band. And then senior year, I had to do student teaching, and that took up all of my time, almost till 6 o'clock some days. And so, you know, I wasn't doing anything at that point.
I actually wanted to get into that point. So, like, you've been doing band and everything, and you've done all these other activities. And so now, let's say you're junior and you're a senior, and you're starting to transition and get ready and start thinking about your life after college. So, I guess, tell us more about, I guess, your journey academically, and then let's transition into how that turned into your career and what you wound up doing after Spelman.
Okay. So, like I said, I started off as a biology major, and I was having a hard time. I always wanted to be a veterinarian. I've been saying I wanted to be a veterinarian since I was 5. I went in there. I was struggling with them classes, and then I didn't like messing with the dead animals. I didn't like dissecting stuff. And I was like, oh, my God, I'm going to have to do this for the rest of my life.
I can't do this for the rest of my life. I'm going to have to do something different. So I really had to. Now, looking back on it, I wish I had explored more of my talents instead of just trying to choose something where I knew I'd have a job. But, yeah, I was trying to find what else am I going to do, because I really didn't have a plan B. It was always veterinary was my plan A, and this is going to work. And so, you know, I had to come up with a plan B on the fly. I majored in math for a second, and I didn't know what I could do in math. I knew, like, people became statisticians and data science, but I didn't know anything about that field. I hadn't even looked into it. I'm like, I don't know what else I know how to do real good. And so I went and took the career test. Like, you go to the career office, and they'll give you a little test that you can take, and it'll give you some jobs that kind of match your personality and your skill set. And so I ended up getting teacher. And a lot of people in my family have been teachers, and my aunts, my grandmother, all of them have been teachers. So I was like, ah, I think I could do this. And got in the major and loved it. I loved going out to the schools. I loved shadowing my teacher, the head teachers that I had shadowed. And yeah, I feel like Spelman was really, really doing a great job of preparing us to be in urban classroom settings and making sure that, you know, we were a good representation and example for our other little black and brown children out here who go to these, you know, Title I schools. Now, afterwards, though, because I don't teach anymore, I don't think Spelman prepared us. And this is not Spelman's fault at all. This is just how the world just ended up being. So, you know, I graduated in 2017, and that kind of was around the time where we started kind of seeing, like, if you've been on social media or looking at the news and stuff like that, they talk about how the scores are dropping and how behaviors, you know, with kids are really out of hand now. That was kind of the whispers and starts of that around that time. And my first year teaching was okay, but it was a little rough, and I wasn't prepared for some of those behaviors that was going on. My second year was great, and I ended up not teaching after my second year because I went to start my doctoral program, and then the pandemic. And then I didn't want to teach anymore after
the
pandemic.
And then the pandemic. Yeah.
So Spelman could not have, nobody's school could have prepared them for what was going on with COVID. Like, COVID affected.
Especially in classrooms.
Yeah. Nobody, I think, was looking at how this was going to affect kids in the long run, because at first it just started off as an extended spring break, and now we're trying to pass out computers to try to get the kids online and all kind of stuff like that. People ain't got Wi-Fi at their houses. It was such a huge gap in learning at that time. Then when we tried to bring them back in from them being at home for a year and some change, like, it looks like a disaster now. It's a war zone now. And so I was just like, you know, I taught 1 year post-pandemic, and I was like, you know what? This isn't for me anymore, because I don't have the wherewithal to deal with this, because you have kids now where you would just have, like, the one kind of kid that you got this rambunctious and you got to kind of give love to. So now it's like your whole class is that rambunctious kid, and you don't be knowing what to do. So, yeah, so now I'm in graphic design, and I do that, and I do the podcast. So looking back now, when I thought about changing my major, I probably should have changed it to communications, because, you know, I love doing this. I love going out and talking to people. I love interviewing people and talking to people about their experiences and whatnot. And also graphic design, I do my own graphics for the most part. I have a Spelmanite right now helping me with some stuff that I haven't, you know, quite learned yet. But I love learning about graphic design. I love designing things for people. And I love, like, getting into my artistic side. And I've only just started since, around February, March. So I've only been doing it for a few months. And I've already, like, okay, this could have been my plan B back in the day. instead of just not having anything. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, no, Spelman. But Spelman might have not prepared me for the education world. Like I said, that's not Spelman's fault at all. It's just pandemic, COVID. That happened. But, it prepared me to hustle. Spelman taught me to be a hustler.
And I was just going to say that because, like, I think sometimes we get so caught up in the fact that, you know, oh, how is this degree going to help you or anything like that? But it's college has never just been only about the degree. And it's like education changes so much, not even necessarily like the educational field, but just pedagogy. So like the manner of teaching, like what if we were students today, some of the things that we would be learning now would be completely different from what we would have learned back when we were in school. And that's right, just because things change so many times. And so you really have to look at, other than how the school is developing you academically, how is it developing you holistically? How are you? What skills are you developing? Like what kind of resilience are you starting to build up? Like as a result of, and I'm not necessarily talking about, you know, like not being able to pay bills or being hungry or something, but it's just when you find yourself, you know, up against adversity, I think college is a great way to figure out how you're going to handle that, because no matter how easy things can be more or less academically, college is also going to be challenging in a lot of instances as well, and it's going to force you to grow up around that. And so I love that you said that you know Spelman turns you into a hustler, because like, yeah, like that's very valuable in the grand scheme of things, to go somewhere that motivates you to pick yourself up, you know, after things don't go right, and still have the strength to press on and try to move towards something better.
Right. I know somebody in my education cohort, she started her own nail tech business. Like some of us don't stay in our same like degree field, but we know how to be independent and start our own businesses and be entrepreneurs. We may have not majored in business, but we still know how to.
You still have that spirit, that entrepreneurial spirit.
Yeah, we still have that entrepreneurial spirit. We still have that work hard spirit.
Yeah. Awesome. So we're just going to get to our last few questions. And so just out of your entire 4 years, and I guess like now that you've had a few years to process the experience, what was your favorite thing about Spelman?
Ooh, I think my favorite thing, aside from band, had to be them pageants.
Really?
Ooh, the pageants used to tickle me.
I think I may have only gone to maybe like one or two pageants in my entire time.
I went
time.
To all of them. Oh, Miss man. Freshman, Miss Junior, Miss Sophomore, Miss Senior, Miss
that
Omega
Psi
Phi, Miss Phi Mu Alpha, went to y'all's pageants, went to Miss Spelman and Miss Maroon and White.
Did you ever go to any of the male pageants like Mr. Delta and Mr. Zeta and stuff like that?
I went to Mr. AKA, I think, 1 year. I don't know if I went to Mr. Delta.
The only time I think I went to a pageant because Kenny was trying out for it and he was playing guitar. It was at Clark for some reason, but I think he was trying out for Mr. Delta at Clark.
Oh.
Yeah, that was interesting.
Yeah.
And Clark is like single letter Delta chapter, so like it was tough. Like they were demanding.
Yeah, I bet they were. Shoot,
that was a good pageant though.
But I like the way they used to come up there, and I will be your next Miss Maroon and White.
The dramatics,
the
theatrics.
Theatrics.
That's another thing,
theatrics.
Man. HBCUs. If we don't know how to do anything else, we know how to make something dramatic.
We gonna have a time. We gonna make it dramatic.
Absolutely.
We gonna carry on and try. Yeah, and see, we was. This is not how it works today, but us 90s babies, we was a little mean. So if somebody went up there and was bad, we shake our keys and then we key them.
Oh, boy. What a time to be alive.
What a time to be alive.
Because folks used to be sick.
Oh, no, they do not boo anymore. We went to something and somebody got up there and it wasn't all that great. And I'm like, oh, no, they're not going to key them. They don't know. They don't even,
I don't even know what
that
means.
They
be looking at us like they're confused or something. Yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting. Okay. All right. And so next to last question, what is something you think the Spelman can do better for its students?
I would say if they have not updated the CAF, they need to update the CAF.
Yeah.
Because one thing that I would have a problem with, and I don't know if anybody else had this problem, but I would get out of band late and the CAF would already be closed.
Yeah.
Now, some people were saying that the food would be making them sick. I just never had that specific experience, but I have had it to where, like, it won't be good, or it might be cold, mm-hmm. or it might find a hair or something like that. Yeah, it was like our sophomore year, it had gotten real bad out of nowhere.
Now, y'all, for context, sophomore year was 2014 for us.
Yeah, so it was just a while ago. I'm pretty sure. Hopefully they have updated their cafeteria. But, yeah, I think I started eating out a whole bunch. And when I discovered that my debit card had money on it, I really started eating out.
Boy, when that refund check hit, it was...
But, yeah, better meal plans, better, you know, have the cafeteria stay open longer. Because one thing at the bigger schools, like at...
Georgia State, Georgia Tech.
I don't know about Georgia State and Georgia Tech. They might have it, but I don't know about their campuses because I ain't never stayed on their campuses. Mm. But Penn State, they had places that were, if not 24 hours, they at least stayed open till midnight.
Yeah. Like, Georgia Tech has, like, a bowling alley that you can go to.
Yeah, they had so much stuff.
Yeah. Like, that is one thing. My mom, like, when I first moved in, my mom was just like, I went to a public university, and I was able to get up to, like, my dorm on an elevator. You will find nary an elevator in a dorm probably at an HBCU unless you're very, very lucky. So,
unless you're staying in one of the newer dorms. Those newer dorms we have elevators.
Now, again, yeah, it has been 7 years since we graduated, so what do we know? this is all speculation. You know, they might be trying to do better by these kids nowadays.
Actually, I think are trying to change Spelman. So another thing I thought they could do better was put air in the freshman dorms. But I think they are about to do some renovating and put air, or hopefully, I'm not 100% sure. I don't know the building plans, but hopefully they're updating to put air in the dorms and or make them bigger. Because, like, thinking back on it, Spelman, and this is something to prepare for if you want to go to Spelman. But sometimes they'll accept more than what we can house. So you might be staying in the lounge instead of, like, an actual room, which girls have said they've had a problem with in recent years. Now, for us back in 2013, we was just happy to be there. And, you know, I don't know, because I ended up in an actual room. But the girls that was sleeping five to a room, you know, sometimes it'd be great and sometimes it just wouldn't be so great. But most of the time they wouldn't stay there for the entire year. Like, second semester, they'll go ahead and move you into a room if somebody has moved out. Mm-hmm. But that is something to prepare for. And, yeah, they need to figure out something different than putting them in the lounges.
Yeah, I've heard some horror stories come out of Spelman. Again, this isn't everybody's experience. Your mileage may vary. Just understand that if you really want to go there, you can certainly make the best of it, and you can certainly find a situation that works for you.
Yes, yes.
Okay. And last question before we wrap up. What are any final words you want to say to any potential HBCU students who are listening to this and, you know, still on the fence, still wondering if it's right for them? What can you tell them about your experience that might help things be clear for them?
Make sure you tour the school. I don't care how you figure out how to get down there. So my school didn't take me to Spelman. I went to Spelman on my own with my parents. Mm. And so, you know, the school was not taking us to a lot of HBCUs. We went to a lot of PWIs to visit. And I knew I wanted to go to a HBCU. So if you know for sure you want to go to an HBCU, junior year, start visiting, try to get in Upward Bound and try to stay for a week or two at one of the schools, you know, get in a summer program at one of the schools, and it'll help you narrow down your decision, because if you stay up there for a night, two nights, you'll be like, oh yeah, I can, you know, stay here for, you know, 4 years. I'm like, mm-mm, I don't like this, uh-uh. You kind of know once you stay for like a week or two, or like even a couple of nights, because I knew from staying that weekend at Spellbound that I knew I was going to love Spellman. So make sure, I don't care how you get there, figure out something, but get on them folks' campus and take a thorough tour and try to stay there overnight, at least one or two nights.
Yeah, have questions prepared and everything, and, you know, and have fun. Be very open to the experience. Some things are going to be different. And then you're going to see different just things at each HBCU. But again, choose what you can afford and what feels like home, and I guarantee you can't go wrong.
Also, start applying for scholarships.
Yep.
As soon as you possibly can. I know there are some scholarships out there, I think, for ninth grade. Start applying as soon as you can see anything up. Don't just wait till senior year, because I applied for some scholarships junior year, but I didn't kick it up into high gear until senior year, and until I knew I was going to Spelman, I really started applying because I'm like, oh my God, this is expensive. So yeah, start. I don't care where you think you're going to, go ahead and start applying to as many scholarships as you can. And the more applications you put in, the more money you're gonna get back. Somebody gonna tell you yes.
Yeah.
And yeah, one last thing. Don't let anybody deter you from, if you feel headset in a decision, you know, go ahead and go with that. Go ahead and go with your gut. If you feel comfortable with it and, you know, you're comfortable with your distance from home, you're comfortable with it financially, and you're comfortable with the atmosphere, go for it and don't let anybody tell you, oh, this school isn't challenging. Oh, you know, once you graduate, the name isn't going to carry, or, oh, you know, it's a party school or whatever. Don't let anybody deter you from that, because mm-hmm. I would, like I said, I wouldn't trade my time at Spelman for anything. But if I had stayed 10 toes down with UAPB, I probably would have went to UAPB at the time. But I kind of let people spook me about UAPB, and so I ended up at Spelman, which was, you know, the best for me. I got a chance to be with a bunch of phenomenal black women doing a bunch of phenomenal black things. Yeah. But I probably would have had the same thing at UAPB as well. So, you know, if you feel comfortable with something, stand 10 toes down on it. But make sure you do your thorough research first.
Absolutely. Well, that's a wrap for episode 2 of I Went to an HBCU podcast. Catch us back here at some point for the episode 3. Well, I think we're gonna switch the roles a little bit, and I'll be answering a few questions. But any last words, babe?
Nope. Just thank you guys for listening.
All right. Thank y'all.
Do you have questions for alumni? Want to know more about the HBCU you want to attend? Want to know about the HBCU that you attend now? Follow I Went to an HBCU on TikTok, Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook, and ask your questions in the comments.